Welcome to the Between These Stitches podcast. My name is Katiuska Guzman and I am your host. This podcast talks to everyday makers about what makes fiber art so special to them. Thank you for listening to season two of the Between These Stitches podcast. I'm so grateful for your support and for listening to the varied fiber artists who have been a part of the show. I know that 2020 has been a challenging year for all of us in a variety of ways, but I hope that these episodes have brought you some type of respite and that you've gotten to know more fiber artists with diverse backgrounds, as well as learning about what makes fiber art so special to them. Have a great summer. On today's episode, I have Deb of Spruce Lane Designs. Deb is a knitter and knitwear designer with creative and colorful patterns, from Fair Isle sweaters to geometric-shaped shawls. Let's go to the show. On today's show, I have Deb from Spruce Lane Designs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. So before we get started into your work as a designer for your company, let's talk a little bit about your fiber story.
My fiber story. So I grew up, my mom was a knitter and her mother was a crocheter, and I'm a lefty. My mom was left-handed, but went to Catholic school and retired her hand behind her back, but she still did a lot of things left-handed, which she knit continental. So I picked up knitting from her. My grandmother, being a crocheter, she crocheted in the right hand and it always looked backwards to me. So I'm still muddling my way through crochet. I enjoy it. I'm a lot slower at the crochet than knitting. So I think I did a lot more knitting as a child. I did a lot of granny squares on the crochet end, but that's it. And probably around, I don't know, 9 or 10, I made the garter stitch hat, garter stitch scarf. But my mom probably did most of the knitting when I was growing up. I had a lot of sweaters and hats and mittens as a child and well into my teenage years. And then when I went to college, my boyfriend at the time, I decided to knit him the boyfriend sweater, which I think I got through. I got through the body right. And sleeve division. And then I think my mom helped finish the sleeves for me. So I think fast forward probably about, let's say, probably when I was married in the early 90s, I started to pick up knitting again for real. Started to just knit things for myself, my husband, Christmas gifts. I had a funny story where my husband has, he's one of five boys. I knit them all Lopi sweaters one Christmas.
Oh, nice.
And and the funny response was, we love these sweaters, but I think you need to give us a turtleneck too, because they're a little itchy around the collar. But anyway, so I continued doing that. We were down New Jersey at the time. I moved back up to New England area, was doing work as an environmental engineer. I left when I had my son, and I started doing some sample knitting for a couple of yarn companies. And somebody asked me one day, they said, oh, would you have any interest in doing technical knitting, technical editing? Do you know how to do that? And I was one who never followed the pattern. I was always changing it up. Right. So I said, this probably is a decent segue. Let's see. They had me work on a pattern for them to see if I knew what I was doing. I guess I passed. Nice. And then I started doing technical editing for a couple of yarn companies, a couple of designers. And I think that kind of just made me, you know, I also wanted to do some of my own stuff. So it kind of became a balancing act of whether I want to do more technical editing or whether I want to do designing, and the designing kind of won out.
Right.
And so I started to do some designs. I took a couple of classes at the Rhode Island School of Design, which were good. They gave me a bit of a foundation as for putting together, you know, a design and ideas and what to look for and submitting design proposals. And then it's just kind of taken off from there.
Awesome. That's really great. It was sort of like a natural progression with some skills that you were already using and then turned into something else.
Yeah, it's an ever-learning process. I always feel like there's something new to learn, whether it be in grading a pattern or sizing a pattern, writing a pattern, what's out there for inspiration, taking that inspiration and transforming it into a design. So I really enjoy the
So
process.
what was the first thing that you designed?
The first thing I designed was actually a cowl called Chex Mix Cowl, and it's got actually it's Checks. It's a play on the cereal. But it's a slip stitch cowl. It's a simple cowl, and it was something we actually had to submit a swatch for one of the design classes at Rhode Island School of Design, and I ended up turning it into a cowl. So that was my very first design.
Oh, awesome. So you took kind of like what you were learning in school and just made it into something nice.
Yeah, it was that was what we it was a requirement. We had different things we had to swatch and ideas and proposals as part of the classes. So I just kind of parlayed that into that first design. And that was, I want to say, probably around 2014, somewhere around there. It's been a while. And then I had a large break. I didn't do anything for quite a while. I think because I was still doing more technical editing at that point. So it's probably another good 2.5 years around late 2016 that I put my next design out.
So when you say technical editing, what does that entail? Technical editing
So kind of
patterns?
correct. Yeah. So I was actually looking to see if, you know, your yarn quantities are correct, if your numbers are correct. I did some grading and sizing. Go through looking at it for grammar to make sure it makes sense, spelling errors, make sure your you know your diagrams are correct. So it says to cast on X stitches and you have a gauge, you want to know that based on your gauge, will X stitches give you the measurement you're looking for? Types of things like that.
So that's actually great because then that led you when you started probably designing your own garments and things like that to know how to grade from one size to the next and all of that.
Yeah, it definitely helped, and it gave me a good, I think, a little better sense of what needed to be done and the details, things that you needed to really pay attention to. It's always interesting going into grading a garment because I always struggle with everybody's body type is so different. You know, proportion, there's so many standards. Craft Yarn Council has standards, and then other groups have standards, but everybody falls somewhere within that range. So even when I design, I always have to be mindful. I try to think, you know, can they easily change this? Can the knitter easily change this to adapt to their body style? And I try to do that with my designs. I also try to parlay that into my test knitting. If I have a test knitter who has a larger bust circumference but has a smaller upper arm circumference, I usually tell them, hey, you know, I'm amenable to you changing whatever you need to change because you're test knitting it for me. I really appreciate that they're test knitting it for me. And I want them to have a finished product that they're going to use. I don't want them to test knit it and go, oh, yeah, I test knit that, but I'm never going to wear it. So, you know, so I try to, you know, adapt it. And I've tried to keep that, I guess, that conversation open. I hope people realize with any of my patterns, if they get stuck, if they need to size it to meet their measurements, if something's off proportionally that works, you know, they need to have it adjusted for them, reach out to me. I'm happy to help.
Awesome. No, and that's so important because a lot of times you might be knitting something and then you're trying it on as you go depending on the style and you're like, "Oh, this is not working out." So it's good to be able to know that you can contact, you know, the designer and get feedback or help that you need. Absolutely.
I mean, I like to have a little bit of waist shaping and a little bit of larger hip circumference on the bottom, but then some people just like their sweater body to be straight up and down. I usually try to put that in the pattern that, hey, you can omit this shaping or, you know, or if there is some certain design that has to have a certain repeat, you can omit, but you still need to keep it a multiple of so many stitches or something like
So
that.
it's almost like you add like a formula and let them know you could do this or that, and and let them sort of pick what might work for them.
Yeah, I mean, so usually my last couple of sweaters, I have a couple of very gentle waist decreases, and then it kind of flares out a little bit, and I'll say omit so many increases at the bottom if you want your hip circumference to only be, this much larger or the same as your bust circumference.
Right. So give us an example. Like, what
So yeah.
is there a sweater you recently put out or a design that you can like give us an example of?
So Sugar Snap, which I put out around March, April, it's in 18 sizes. It's a 0 to 2 inches of positive ease sweater. So it goes all the way from 32 inches to 66 inch bust circumference. And what I did was, so here's your, you have your bust circumference and your waist comes down and the shaping gives you about, I want to say it's around 1.5 inch less than your bust circumference at the waist. And then you increase back out. And when you increase back out, you result in a hip circumference that's approximately, I want to say it's 2, 2.5 inches larger than your bust circumference. But within that, it says, if you don't wish to have that much of a difference between your bust and your hips, you can omit. And I'm going quickly off the top of my head. I want to say it's 5 or 6 increases. You can omit, I want to say 4 of the increase sets in there. So you're basically just back up to your initial bust circumference. So that's information is in there. And then I usually put in, once you've worked all the that, so that one has a ferrule design on the yoke. Once you've worked all the ferrule design, if you find that, your yoke needs to be longer, or if you want your upper arms or your bust to be larger, you can add additional stitches or increases in. Or you can sub, or if it needs to be the opposite, you subtract the underarm cast on stitches at the sleeve and body divide.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's so important,
Yeah.
especially I always find the underarm to be one of the toughest parts to knit and to sort of sometimes get right.
Yeah, it's tough, and I mean, I try to. So usually I do cast on, and a lot of times I have, once you do your sleeves, you pick up in those cast on stitches. I love it. I mean, right now these are all top down yokes. It's a little different. Obviously, if you do a contiguous raglan's pretty much the same. But it varies. And it varies on your gauge too. A lot of my sweaters, you have a yoke, you have a ferrule pattern, then you go into stockinette. So you're gonna make sure that your ferrule and your stockinette, straight stockinette gauge are similar, or you're gonna have a lot of puckering from the ferrule into, it's funny. I was one of those people who probably was never a big swatcher when I was knitting for myself, and now I've learned to swatch. I actually, for a lot of my yokes, I call them mini cowls. I literally will get cast onto a size 16-inch needle and just knit around and incorporate the increases into it too, so I can see how the increases
Oh,
look
that's a great
within
idea.
the stitches. So,
I was going to say a needle size makes a difference, right? I've heard, I haven't done ferrule yet, but I've heard that if you go up, I think a needle size on the yoke part, if that's where the design is, and then go down for the
yes, a lot
body.
of, correct. Yeah, a lot of people tend to knit more tightly. First of all, a lot of people tend to knit, myself included, more tightly in the round, straight stockinette. And then the ferrule, you tend to knit even more tightly than that, because of the fact I think the stranding adds to that tension. So a lot of times people will go up, need to go up a needle size to get the same stitch gauge, going from ferrule to just straight stockinette. The other thing I find too, for me, my round gauge in ferrule tends to be larger than my stockinette. So one of my sweaters, my round gauge in my ferrule, I think was 28 rounds, but then straight stockinette it was 34. So it's interesting to always keep, I try to incorporate into the patterns now both stitch and round gauge for the stockinette and the ferrule. Because if you're working that, you could end up with, if you're not within that gauge, and some of the sweaters have a pretty good size ferrule pattern on the yoke, you can end up with a yoke that's deeper than what you really want or what the pattern calls for.
Yeah, that's important to have to have all of that information there and kind of know, where to go and when to change or kind of pivot, right? Like, oh,
Yeah.
I need a different size here or make sure that I'm actually doing my swatch to make sure that it'll fit as intended.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's not, it's a lot of factors to consider when you really think
Yeah,
about
it is. And now I'm like, wait a minute, I don't
it.
know. Stick to one color sweater.
Nah. It's I think once you do them though,
It'll be fun.
you get a feel for how your gauge turns out. For those who haven't done a sweater, a color work sweater stranded knitting, my best suggestion is start with a hat that has a fair, it's a smaller version of a yoke. It really is. It gives you an idea. It's, so you've got less repeats, but you still learn how to do that stranding and tensioning of your strands and whatnot. So it's a great practice. And once you, if you're comfortable with that, it's the same as a, the sweater's the same, just more stitches.
I think I'll start there. I think I've stayed
Oh.
away from them. I mean, I think they're beautiful, and I think I've stayed away from them because of that. Because I'm afraid of all of the colors and stuff. But it's definitely worth trying some, you're right, like on a smaller scale, and then seeing and working out the glitches right from there.
Yeah, work out the glitches and figure out what works for you. So I normally knit, I call it confused continental because I knit continental. I hold the yarn in my left hand, but I throw,
Oh, really?
is really, it's really weird to see me knit. But then when I knit color work, I will have a strand in each hand. So I'll use both my left and right hands. Some people, they do better off holding all in one hand. I've seen people that have the rings
Oh, okay.
for string yarn. Some people do really well with those. It's what works for you and gives you the tension that you need so that you get a fairly even gauge and tension around. So I think that's the biggest trick is just figuring that out. And then you can go from there. But yeah, a little practice.
Practice.
I can tell you a funny story. When I first started knitting, I still am a fairly tight knitter. When I first, the first time I started to knit after I had been married and I hadn't really picked it up for quite some time, I cast on and then I pulled my stitches so tightly, I couldn't get the
Oh my
needle
goodness.
all the way in the stitch. Yeah, that's how tight a knitter I was. So my mother said to me, she's, you no, she's, you've got to relax your stitches. You'll never be able. She's, besides, in fact, your hands will start to ache. I said, yeah. But yeah, I mean, they were so tight. I thought you had to pull it just so tightly to make sure it was even. And then once I realized that's really not the case, it was a lot easier.
Oh, goodness. So one of the things you said was that your patterns go up to 66 inches, I believe, with the recent sweater. So let's
Correct.
talk a little bit about
Yeah.
that,
So,
about size inclusivity and how that works in terms of pattern writing and stuff like that.
my last, I'm turning Sugar Snap and When Twilight Falls, my last two sweaters and my current ones now are all sized up. And I'm finding that, I mean, it's pattern wise, work wise, it's an additional sizes to grade, but I'm already in there doing the grading, and I just feel it's something that needs to be done, that should be done. I have some earlier patterns that I'm in the process of grading up to. I was hoping to get them out sooner. I'm getting there. It's a balance of trying to go back and redo the old ones and then keep the new ones going forward at the same time. I think that and the fact that I keep finding myself moved around the house depending on who has a Zoom and who has a piano lesson and who's got a meeting with my husband's job and a distance learning with my son.
Thank you, pandemic.
I've had a Yes. I've had a lot of wandering around the house lately, and I tend to work on a desktop because I like having a larger screen, especially for doing any kind of graphics and charting and tables and whatnot. So, and a lot of times when I get moved, I just kind of grab my knitting and go sit and knit someplace. So I'm a little behind on a few things. But yeah, so what I've been finding for a lot of my sweaters, I tend to do a lot with 0 to 2 inches of positive ease. So when I get to that size, I've ended up with about 18 sizes, and I've been actually taking the patterns and breaking it into two patterns for sizes 1 through 9 and then 10 through 18, just because for readability, you're not sitting there trying to go through 18 sets of numbers when you're reading a pattern. I've been doing that. My other thing is trying to get test knitters. I have a lot of test knitters for the larger, for the, sorry, the smaller sizes. I would love to get more test knitters for the larger sizes. I think it's really important to know about, to make sure that it's successful as far as proportion, and sizing and yarn quantity too. It's a lot of knitting. It's a lot of yarn that's required for the larger sizes, and I just want to know. I want to make sure that I'm doing what I need to do to accommodate everybody.
Now, when you started doing the larger sizes, did you see that there was a need for it? Did someone contact you and ask you, like, what was the, how did you make that decision? I want to make sure that all my patterns are size inclusive.
So part of it was I saw that, there's a need for us. I saw the big, the big discussion on Instagram, and I guess my feeling is I want my patterns to be accessible to everybody. Why shouldn't somebody be able to knit a sweater in their size? People come in all different shapes and sizes. They should be able, I want everything to be accessible to everybody. So yes, there is a need for it. So I started at that point to start to upgrade. I started to research, trying to look at different measurements for different sizing. What's, Craft Yarn Council has still got, they've only gone so far, but looking, there are a couple of people on Instagram who have done some phenomenal work putting together information as far as sizing and what was out there. And I started even going on websites, different clothing companies, and seeing what they had for their sizing. And just trying to cull those numbers and pull them together and work them into the grading so that you have some idea. And it's easy to just grade and throw a number in there, but if that number isn't really representative of what's, what size that person needs in proportion, that it's not gonna work. So it was interesting. It was a bit of research for me, but I felt it was something that definitely should be done. So, and then I have had a couple of people reach out to me about my older patterns. I am in the process. I have one that's just about ready to go. I'm hoping the beginning of June to get that out for a test knit call. And then as I continue on down, there's one I'm actually in the process of re-knitting and upgrading because the yarn, the dyer is no longer in business, and I want to put a different yarn available for it too. So I'm knitting, but that one's, I've been knitting that and then knitting new ones at the same time. I joke that I wish I could learn to knit either in my sleep or knit with my toes at the same time that I'm knitting
Yes,
with
you
my
would
hands.
get so
I
much
could
more
improve
done.
on it. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so I mean it's getting there. And as I said, anything moving forward, I just put a recent pattern up for test knitting Smoldering Embers, and that sweater is also in 18 sizes.
Now,
So I
when test knitters test, are you able to get them, or I don't know, I guess depending on maybe on who you use, if it's a dyer or yarn company, help assist them with yarn, because I am assuming especially larger sizes.
Yeah, it depends. When I did Sugar Snap, the dyer did, she offered a discount for her yarn if they wanted to use her yarn. I'm also open to them using whatever yarn they want. If they have yarn in their stash, as long as they get gauge that they can work the sweater and it's, yarn that they want to use for that sweater, I have no problem with that. It doesn't, just because I've knitted up in that yarn doesn't mean. So my current one, Smoldering Embers, is yarn that I had purchased that wasn't in collaboration with anybody. So I just, unfortunately, there's nothing there as far as discount. I didn't really reach out though either. I put it together. But as I said, I'm open to knitting in whatever yarn they want to use.
Yeah, that's important.
It doesn't
too.
have to be. I mean, it doesn't, you can, whatever, you know, whatever you got in your stash. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but my stash, I could stand to knit a few more things than what I have in my stash. You know, whatever works, it's fine. And I've seen some gorgeous, you know, variations. People, which this is part of the fun for me, is when I put out a sweater in a certain yarn, I love seeing all the variations that people come up with, different yarns, different color combinations, different textures. I had one Sugar Snap tester. She actually held a strand of mohair with her yarn, and it was beautiful. I had another one where she turned a two-color yoke into a three-color yoke. It's just, it's fun. I think that's probably one of my favorite things about designing, is seeing what everybody, when they take that design and do something else with it. I had another design recently, the Once Again sweater that somebody turned into a poncho. It looks amazing.
That's cool. Nice, yeah.
And somebody else took that design, turned into a cardigan. I was like, oh, great. It's just neat to see what people do with it.
And I have to say, when people use different yarns, like when I go on Ravelry and I'm like looking at a pattern or something, and you know how they have the section on yarn ideas? It's nice to see that there are a variety of yarns there available, because then I'm like, oh, look, I actually have, and Ravelry tells you, right? If you put it in your stash on Ravelry, they'll tell you, oh, you actually have this particular yarn, so you could use it on this project.
Yep.
So,
Yeah, which is nice. Yeah, it's interesting, because it's a for me, it's a fine line professionally. If I collaborate with a dyer and they've given me the yarn, I'll only specify their yarn on the pattern page. I feel that's a professional courtesy to them. So it's a little bit tough, but by the same token, you know, not everybody has that yarn, has the means to acquire that yarn. So they should always feel free to use what works best for them.
Right. Yeah, that's a great idea. So let's talk a little bit about inspiration, because I know we're talking about color work and, you know, different patterns, but where do you get your inspiration from to come up with your pattern ideas?
Everywhere. Yeah. So, well, it depends. I literally, my poor husband, we're driving along and I'm in the passenger seat and, Honey, slow down. Wait. I got to get a picture of that. Wait. You know, I see a mural on a wall, or I see a building that has something on the facade that looks really cool that I think could be a knitting pattern. I walked into a concert, and I'm in one of the halls here in Rhode Island, and I'm taking photographs of the ceiling because all I can see is a knitting pattern in the ceiling. Sometimes when we're happen to be out on a hike, I'll see a pattern on a leaf. I'll see, you know, maybe a spider web. It varies. Sometimes I find a stitch pattern that I like. The Once Again sweater that I did was a stitch pattern that was basically a rib stitch with a one simple twisted stitch, and then I kind of played around with it and expanded upon it. Sometimes I'm watching TV and you see somebody wearing something, and I pause the TV and grab my phone and take horrible pictures on the screen. But, it varies. There's no one thing. I can be in a museum and find something, or it could be somebody is walking by and wearing something that occasionally I'll say, excuse me, could I take a picture of that pattern on your sleeve? And sometimes they run the other way. I find it from all over the place. And I think sometimes it gives me a different vision of things when we're out and doing things, because I'm thinking patterns. Does that translate into a yarn pattern, or does that, you know, those colors go together? Or it's just a variety of sources that I find for inspiration.
Right. And that's nice, because obviously inspiration is everywhere. So being able to just be open to it and then see something and translate it is to me is pretty amazing, because I know I look at color and sometimes I see how people put it together and I'm like, wow, I don't think that I would have thought of that, but it's so good to be able to see it and then watch how people actually create something with it.
Yeah, it's fun, and I'm, sometimes the color is dictated by if you're doing a collaboration. I've done some dyers where they pick out the colors, and then other dyers will just say, "Oh, this is what we have. What do you want?" It varies
Right.
from dyer to dyer as far as the color goes. What I end up using.
So how do your collaborations end up working then? Do you approach dyers? Have dyers approached you? Like, how do you figure out I'm going to use this yarn?
Both, a little of both. I've had so Marion of Marinated Yarns. I had actually sent her an email saying I'd really, I was interested in using her yarns. Did she provide yarn support? And this is way back, whoosh, I want to say 2018, the fall of 2018. It was a while ago, but she's great. She had sent me, it was her DK. I like the fact that she had a DK weight gradient set, and I thought that would be neat to incorporate into a sweater yoke. It was funny. I had gotten the sweater, what ended up being named once again, because the poor thing, I knit up what I thought I wanted to do with it in a swatch, hated it. So I decided, oh, it's not going to become a sweater, it's going to become a shawl. So I started to knit it up in a shawl. And my friend came over to the house and she looked at it. She said, oh, nice schlanket.
Schlanken.
Shawl blanket.
Right.
It was so heavy. And she looked at it. I said, okay, ripped it out again. And on the third try, once again, it's a name. I was knitting it. I actually liked it on the third try. So it became a sweater. And then as I've progressed along, I've seen people at Rhinebeck and different festivals, and sometimes I'll go and introduce myself. And talk to them about possibly doing collaborations. Then they'll contact me, and I've had other people that have just, said, "Hey, are you interested? We'd like to, have you do a design with our yarn." So it varies. Some of it is me contacting them. Some of it is them contacting
Right.
me.
That's great. I mean, it's nice to see the collaborations. I mean, mostly on Instagram is where I see it. And it's because it's fun to see how people end up sort of working together and how they put things together. And then colors, because I think that's where it becomes fun when they end up creating like a kit of multiple color schemes, and especially with, sweaters where they're like multiple colors and stuff.
Yeah, it's fun, and I think some of the things that I find is I'm a huge, I love purple. I was a kid that grew up with the purple bedroom, and for me, I always find purple sometimes the most temperamental color to photograph. So I've tended not to do a lot of designs in purple, but I'm slowly venturing into that realm. I've a few designs coming up that will be in purple, but I'll usually what I'll try to do is look for colors when I'm working with a dyer and say, hey, I like this grouping or I like this grouping. But because a lot of the times I'm doing it over the computer, I kind of leave it to them. They've got in front of them, it's their yarn, it's their colors, they know how they interplay better than I do. So I kind of let them have the final. Yes, that'll work. No, you're way off base. It looks like this, but I'm looking at it right now. I don't think it'll work type of thing. And go from there. So
Yeah, that's one of the things when I interviewed Jill of Jillian Kittles. That she said, if you contact her, she'll help you put pair things together, right? And I've seen a lot of dyers doing that on
I think
Instagram.
a lot of Yeah, a lot of dyers do that. Marion's great with that. There's quite a few dyers that definitely will help you with that because they know their yarn. They know how their colors are going to behave. They also know how the bases behave too. It's so hard to buy off the internet in some ways because it's such a, to me, yarn is such a tactile experience. And obviously you miss that from just looking at a screen. And then of course there's always, I always find too, it's not huge. A lot of the dyers are very good at photographing their yarn, but even just from batch to batch, the subtle nuance, just the way that batch might take the dye more than the next batch takes the dye, we can always have a little bit of a change. So it's always kind of nice to have the dyer's input on the color
Yeah,
choices.
no, agreed. And I'm actually noticing more now too, where sometimes I think in the last year they're now putting more like solids next to like speckled yarn or the colorful yarn, which I appreciate because I shy away from some of that like really bright colored stuff. But it looks, I'm like, oh, okay. If it's next to a solid color, I might be more willing to say, oh yeah, I can pair that together and see how that works.
Yeah, one tones down, it tones it down a little bit if you don't want all, you just want that pop of color and you've got that pop, but then you're back into the solids or, yeah, it is kind of nice. And you know, it's funny when speckles first came out because I'm a very big, I like saturated colors, I like rich, saturated colors, gem tones. When the sparkles very first came out, my first thought was the sparkle speckles, sorry, first came out, my first thought was, oh, there's not enough saturation in them. But then they've started over dyeing bases that have, you know, when they started over dyeing the gray bases and over dyeing, you know, the saturated colors, the speckles onto the saturated colors, they're gorgeous. I think. My biggest thing I find though is if I'm doing a color work sweater and I have something that has a lot of speckles on it, if any of those speckles tend to be the same color as your main color, takes away the crispness of the pattern of the Fair Isle pattern because it'll tend to fade in certain sections. So you've really got to look at all the colors. For me, at least I do, I try to look at all the colors on the, you know, the variegated or the speckled yarn versus the backdrop that I'm, you know, going to be playing it against.
Yeah, that's a good idea to remember that if part of it is, very similar to the main color, then yeah, you're gonna sort of lose the difference between the
Yeah.
two, the contrast.
They're so playful though. They're such, I mean, and people, some of the, they're just, it's so neat to see everybody's interpretation of them too.
Oh my,
It's just
yeah. I mean, I think all of the dyers do like amazing jobs at their colors, and they each have like their own unique style, right? So it's always like, wow, which one do I pick?
I know. So somebody will see, you know, get there and sometimes a dyer will say, well, what do you want to use? I'm going, one of each. There's just so many pretty colors. I'm going, I don't know what to choose from.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming at times.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's part of the process that I enjoy, figuring out the colors. And then, as much as I probably would never have said this long ago, I actually enjoy the swatching to see how it turns out. So I have enough,
Yeah,
you
that's
know, to see that the idea I've come up with, whether it works or not, it kind of is the final test to make sure I can parlay it into a, you know, into a sweater or whatever, a shawl, whatever I'm working it into.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, I know I when I swatch, I tend to have done it with one color, but you're right, like if it's multiple colors, you really need a swatch with all of them to see how they're going to play
Yeah.
together.
Yeah. That and if you're doing as you know, you're doing something that's Fair Isle in the round, you really want to see what that Fair Isle gauge you're gonna get
That's
too.
right. That's right. Can't
So,
forget that.
and you can still swatch flat in the round. You can just, you knit it and then you just slide everything back to the, you know, if you use a circular, slide it all back to the front of your needle. So you just have these big long floats across the back, but it mimics because you're always working the right side, knitting in the round.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I never thought about that.
Yeah, it's a little fiddly, but then when you're done, you know, when you go to block the swatch, you can actually just, you can trim those because they're so long. You can trim those in the back and then you can just lay it flat and see what you have
Oh,
for your
good
gauge.
tip. Thank you.
Welcome. The other thing I try to do too when I do my patterns, I from my swatch, when I do the larger swatches that I call my mini cowls, I actually take that information and I tend to write my patterns before I knit them up. So once I'll go through, I'll grade them all and then I'll print it out and I'll actually sit there and knit my sample for that pattern. Because I'd like to make sure that what I'm knitting and what I'm going to photograph is what the pattern says. Sometimes it you knit something and then you, oh, that's not going to work, let me just fudge that, and then when you go to translate it into the pattern, what's in the photo,
right, looks different.
Is the pattern, yeah, so you know, people, to me, that's what they buy, that's why they decide to buy the pattern, because they see the photo of it and they like how it looks. So then to have a pattern that doesn't give them exactly what they see in the photo,
right? Yes, I can see that. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Yeah, that, and then you're like, wait, but her, I've seen that. I forgot what it was. There was, I think it was a sweater where some people were complaining about how the band at the top, the neck band, looked different in the pictures than what they actually ended up knitting. And it was like, I read it on Ravelry where, you know, people write their notes and stuff. So I can see how that, you know, plays into it. And if you were looking for a certain look and then you end up not getting it, that can be frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets a little bit. So I try to do that, which that's another reason why I like the larger, you know, the bigger swatches. It gives me a good feel. It gives me an idea of how long the yoke is going to be. It gives me my round gauge and my stitch gauge for my color work.
Yeah. So what do you have coming up next?
What do I have coming up next? So I have actually a shawl coming out is my next release. Marion of Marinated Yarns has these little bundles called Ets. It's her short of marionettes. Mm-hmm. And they are all mini skeins of varying sizes and colors. No two bundle is alike.
Oh, cool.
So she said to me, she says, oh, could you design a shawl that uses a skein of those and one, and they're all fingering weight, and one 400 yard skein of fingering weight, you know, as a main color. And I said, sure.
Yeah.
So I have it's a shawl called Please Join Me. Mm-hmm. And it's named that for a couple of reasons. We're hoping to do a knit along for the shawl itself.
Right.
And we're also, what I did, because the mini, the little bundle of Ets, sometimes you can have 10 skeins, sometimes you can have 17 skeins. It depends. Basically, what she does is the skeins are put together so that they total 400 yards. Mm-hmm. And so I actually used the Russian join method. I took all the skeins, I lined up my color progression, mm-hmm. I joined them all into one cake before I started knitting the shawl. So I had no ends to weave in.
Is that the one where you use a needle to bring the yarns together?
Correct. Yeah. And it's something I've never really done before. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to have no ends to weave in.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I please join me. So please join me in knitting. Please join me in joining together your yarn,
right.
Or want to weave in ends. Or the other option is, if you don't know what color progression you really want, you can still rush and join it as you go along,
right.
As opposed to doing it all at once. So that's my next release. I also then have a sweater, Smoldering Embers, that's up in test knitting right now. It's Spin Cycle in Brooklyn Tweed. That's coming out in July. I have some, and I have one, two, three other sweaters and a kit coming out with Blueprint.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
Okay. I'm busy.
Yeah.
And then trying to, you know, as I said, trying to get some upgrading done too. So on the sizing on the older sweaters that I have.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it sounds like you're busy. It sounds like a full year already.
Yeah, stay tuned. And I have something in the works for December right now, too. I know that seems a long way off, but...
Hey, it's almost June, so...
I know, it doesn't seem possible. So, yeah, so there's something... I've got that more in the fall. I'll start talking about that, but yeah. That's going to be something interesting that I haven't done before. So
yeah. Yay. Oh, exciting. Can't wait to see then. Call me first. Let me know.
I'll let you know. I'll send you a DM.
Yeah.
Hey, this is what going on?
Is it socks? I'm into sock knitting right now.
It's going to be a variety. I don't know if it's, you know, it's funny. I think you and I had this conversation the other day. Unless I do two at a time, I'm a horrible sock knitter. I have a lot of lonely socks looking for me. So I do one and then I can't seem to get the other one finished.
Two at a time. Way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've almost gotten that way a bit with the sleeves on the sweaters too.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think that's such a great way to actually knit your sleeves, because that's right where everyone's like always like sleeve island, and you're like, this is taking forever. Yeah, yeah, so, yep, two at a time, socks and sleeves. Yeah.
And I think some of the other comments I've seen too, and I haven't tried this yet, is to do the sleeves. People do the sleeves first. And then what they do is they pull them inside. So when they're working the body, they're not flopping around.
Oh, interesting.
So I was like, yeah. So I was thinking that for my next one, I might give that. I'm going to do two at a time sleeves first and then pull them inside and work up the body.
Yeah, because sometimes when you get to the body, it's just, it could be just like stockinette or, you know, and you're just like round and round and round.
Yeah. That I also know when I'm doing the sleeves and the whole body's done, I'm flopping the body around. As I'm
Yeah, that's what I don't like about the sleeves. Yeah.
So I said, no, I might give that a try for my next one. See how I like it.
Yeah.
Always looking for new techniques to kind of either, you know, ease it up or make it a bit speedier.
Yes, yes, me too. Or I'm about to buy a knitting machine for any stockinette.
I have a knitting machine that somebody gave me, a friend of my mom. She's, oh, I'm never going to use it. I need to sit down and I'd be curious just to try it. Obviously not for what I'm doing for designing, but just as something, another thing to learn.
Yeah.
And set it up and see if I can get it to work successfully.
Do you know Gwen? Gwen of Designs by Gwen?
No.
So she uses her knitting machine for a stockinette.
Oh, wow.
I interviewed her, last fall. And she was the one that got me really curious about them. And I've looked into them already because I'm like, oh, are you going to save me time?
I actually just had somebody who knit one of my designs. She hand knit the yoke. And then she did that. She machine knit the body and the sleeves.
Yes, that's what she says she does, because it's just so much. She's like, why would I sit there? She's like, by the time you've done one row, I've done like 10, you know.
Does she find a gauge difference at all?
I know she's been using machine knitting for a long time, so I'm not really sure quite. I haven't quite understood how the gauge works. So I don't quite know, but
I'm going to go unearth that podcast. Yes. I missed that one. I apologize.
It's all good. No, dig back. Yeah, cause she told me about them, and I was like, this is a good idea.
So much for knitting in my sleep. Right. Just use a knitting machine. I'm just kidding. I don't know if you can knit in the round on a knitting machine, but I don't even know.
I don't know either. Those are all great questions.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting when I started taking classes at Rhode Island School of Design, they used to have knitting machine classes on Wednesday nights, but Wednesday nights I sang in a local group. Mm-hmm. And that's when our rehearsals were, so I never made it to the classes. And then Rhode Island School of Design is kind of the continuing ed has changed over the years. It's evolved, some positive things, some negative things. But one of the things they changed was that they wanted you, no longer could you use their facilities. You had to bring your own knitting machine. So at that point, I didn't have one. Right. So then I got one, but I haven't had time to even look to see if there's, and at this point, everything's closed, so it doesn't matter. So I have a couple of books with this machine. It's just finding, I think, the time to go through it uninterrupted and experiment.
Well, when everyone else is on their Zoom calls, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's going to be an interesting fall and see how we all going back to school and whatnot, and even the summer.
Yeah, even the summer, absolutely. So, Deb, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to have spoken to you, learn more about your design process, and see what you come out with. Hopefully some socks.
You might have to wait a while on those. I have a friend, Pam, Stillwater Designs, a friend of mine, Pam Sluter. She's a big stock sock person. I leave the socks to her.
Yeah, all right.
But it's been great. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Please also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you may listen to your podcasts. Also review the podcast and let others know what you think of Between These Stitches. Until next time. Thank you for listening to today's episode. To get more information and the show notes, please go to betweenthestitches.com/podcast.